Holly Kernan in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We are less than a month away from the November 6th election, and Governor Jerry Brown has launched a full-on campaign for his signature ballot initiative, Proposition 30, which aims to raise taxes by about $8 billion to stop more cuts to education. During his first term as governor, Jerry Brown campaigned vigorously against Proposition 13. However, once it passed, he became an advocate for it, and Jerry Brown even supported the flat tax when he ran for president in 1992. Jerry Brown is the son of a two-term Democratic governor, Edmund G. Brown, and Jerry was elected California Secretary of State in 1970, then governor in 1974. In 1976, he ran for president unsuccessfully. He was re-elected governor in 1978 and then ran for president again in 1980. In 1998, he was elected mayor of Oakland, and after serving two terms, he was elected the state's attorney general. And today, he has come full circle in his political career as governor of California once again. So what can we learn by reviewing his political report card? How do you rate Governor Jerry Brown's performance after nearly 2 years in office and a career that spans decades? Well, to help do that, we are joined by Mark Paul, who's a former deputy state treasurer and co-author of the new book, California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Holly.
And we're also joined by Peter Schrag, who is the former editorial page editor and columnist of the Sacramento Bee, and author, most recently, of Not Fit for Our Society, Immigration and Nativism in America. He also writes weekly columns for the California Progress Report. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you both on with us. And we will invite our listeners to join our conversation about the current policies and legacy of Governor Jerry Brown in just a minute. So before we talk about Governor Brown's overall policies for the past 2 years, why don't we go through some of the bills that he signed and vetoed last month? This year he has signed over 800 bills. What major bills reached his desk this year and how did he react? Why don't we start with you, Peter?
Well, there's a whole bunch of bills, and I don't know exactly which ones reached his desk in the last month and which reached his desk before that, but there's certainly a number. There are a couple have to do with young immigrants in California, one of which he vetoed, one of which he signed.
So he vetoed the Trust Act, I understand, and he signed the bill that would allow undocumented young people to get a driver's license.
That's correct. And I can't remember whether he got the pension bill in the last month or not, but he signed that. It's a kind of a fairly weak pension reform bill. I'm trying to think of the rest of the list. I'm sure Mark can help me out.
Here, Mark, yeah, why don't you help us out?
Well, the other big things among them were the high-speed rail, to begin the high-speed rail. Another big one was that came at the very end of the session was a deal that was cut on workers' compensation, basically a deal that was hammered out between labor and big business, and that Jerry helped in the final days to both to push through the legislature and then sign. Those were among the signature, along with pension reform, among the signature bills of the second year of the session.
And he vetoed the domestic workers' bill of rights.
Right.
Which was a big deal in the immigrant communities. So how do you look at these decisions to veto or sign these bills, and what does that tell us about who Jerry Brown is as a governor now?
If you're asking me,
Peter,
Jerry once famously said that to keep the canoe going straight, you have to paddle on one side and then paddle on the other side, and I think that still kind of describes Jerry Brown. He's I used to think that if there had been moderate or liberal Democrats in California, Jerry Brown might well have been one of them. His instincts are very much centrist kinds of instincts. Jerry is also has a streak of a real sort of austere nature, a streak of austerity in him. He has a kind of a hair shirt sense of things, and I think you see that in him again and again, and that goes way back to his early days in public office. So I'm not surprised at anything he did. I mean, if he vetoes one immigrants' rights bill and signs another, that all seems kind of the pattern with Jerry.
And how about you, Mark? How do you see this as representative of his vision for the state and what kind of a governor he is this time around?
Well, I mean, Jerry Brown was an etch-a-sketch politician before Mitt Romney ever was a politician. He has, over the course of his career, he has been on both sides of many of the major issues in California. Jerry really is more defined by paradox and contradiction as any strain of consistency. Although I agree with Peter that if you're going to find the threads of that are the real Jerry Brown, certainly this austerity. Girls wear their hearts on their sleeves, and Jerry wears, as Peter says, a hair shirt on his heart. And that has been a defining characteristic of him, for most of his career.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this so-called etch-a-sketch political postures. He was virulently against Proposition 13, but once it passed, he became an advocate of it. And in some ways, that's really defined the state and the financial crisis in the state. And now he's pushing for Prop 30. So how can you just talk a little bit about Jerry Brown's policies around and stances around Prop 13 and how that got us to here and what's going to happen with Prop 30? You want to start, Mark?
Well, Jerry in some ways bears a major responsibility for the passage of Prop 13. As you said, he opposed it, although describing him as a vehement opponent wouldn't be quite true. Jerry was not vehement about anything, but it was in part his neglect of the issue of property taxes as they were soaring in his first term that began, helped move along the push, the movement in California for property taxes. And then he didn't recognize how important the issue was. He felt it was more important to guard. At the time, the state had a major surplus.
Imagine that.
A surplus that in the end amounted to half a year's state budget. I mean, equivalent to today's terms to roughly $50 billion. But he wanted to shepherd that and keep that in part because at the time New York City was going broke and Jerry wanted to run for election in 1978, contrasting California's fiscal stability with what was going on in the rest of the country, and of course for his national aspirations as well. So he ended up neglecting the issue of property taxes until it in the end was too late. And then, as you say, he switched sides. So he declared himself a born-again tax cutter and spent the summer of 78 after Prop 13 passed, going in the mornings to have breakfast with Howard Jarvis. And Jerry would show up in his three-piece suit and Jarvis in his pajamas and robe, and they'd sit and Jerry would seek the great man's advice on how to proceed.
So much so that they began to nickname him Jerry Jarvis, right?
Yes.
Right. You wanted to get in there, Peter. Go ahead.
Well, I think he very much and got Howard Jarvis's endorsement for his reelection. And of course, at the time, Howard Jarvis was probably the best known political figure in California by a long shot. And I think that the endorsement probably helped. And Jerry also, I think we also have to say that in terms of the lasting effect, Jerry negotiated or helped negotiate and certainly approved the bailout of local governments that immediately followed the passage of Prop 13, and that set up a pattern that continues to this day, in which basically the state government does the taxing and the locals spend the money, and nobody's clearly nobody's accountable. And of course, people like their local governments better than they like state government, much better. But state government gets the blame for a great deal of the heavy lifting that it's doing for the local governments. And I think if, in fact, if the state had allowed local governments to really feel the impact of the property tax cuts that Proposition 13 imposed, maybe voters would have understood much more clearly early on the effects of what they did.
And that is Peter Schrag, who writes weekly columns for California Progress Report. We're also joined by Mark Paul, who's an expert on California policy and former deputy treasurer of the state of California. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan in for Rose Aguilar. And we're analyzing the governorship of Jerry Brown. How do you grade Governor Brown's performance? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number. We'd like to have your participation in this conversation with Mark and Peter. 866-798-8255. What are Jerry Brown's most significant accomplishments, and where does he fall short? If you followed his career, what do you think of him as a politician, and what do you think of his legacy? 866-798-TALK. Again, that's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And you can also send us email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Well, Peter and Mark, let's talk just a little bit further about Proposition 30, his major initiative to stop the massive cuts that will happen to education and other. He's been selling this initiative. It would be an increase in income tax for people earning more than $250,000 a year and a quarter cent boost in the sales tax. And he's largely selling it because of the terrible things that will happen to schools and colleges if it doesn't pass. So how do you two analyze Prop 30? Go ahead and start, Mark.
Well, it's, you know, we, Prop 30 bulks large, as you say, you describe it as a major initiative, but what's striking, you know, to me about this is how we've diminished our expectations in California, which is very much a Jerry Brown kind of thing. That was one of his catchphrases from his first term as governor for people to lower their expectations. I mean, if Prop 30 passes, what it mainly does is it temporarily stabilizes California's state budget at the current very low levels of spending for services in California. For instance, it will provide money to allow the schools funding at a level that's 11% below where it was when Jerry Brown came into office. So we are having a big campaign in California about a measure which leaves California, even if it passes, very much at the bottom of the states in school spending.
You think it doesn't go far enough, that it is this product of these lowered expectations?
It's basically it's an attempt to put a patch on a crisis we in California have as a result of a much larger governance crisis in California. But so it's very typical, you know, of California, you know, to try to keep stumbling, kicking the can down the road. And as I say, it's temporary. I mean, the Brown's proposal increases the sales tax for 4 years and the income tax on high earners for 7, and then we're back, you know, where we started.
Peter?
Yes, I think it's. I think the choice for voters on Prop 30, and of course it gets complicated by Prop 38, which is a related story. But I think with Prop 30, the choice is really between a very low level status quo and something worse. But it doesn't really promise any major improvement in California's public goods, in its education programs and all the rest. No, it does not. And as Mark said, it is very much like Jerry Brown. It's a lower expectation, austerity, and of course it just keeps things going at a very inadequate level. Is there any kind of a bright future in this? No, there is not.
So what would you say are Jerry Brown's biggest accomplishments, Peter?
In the last couple of years, it's hard for me. I mean, as I say, I think there are some small things. As Mark said, there's this little pension reform. There's a little bit of a, but and of course the driver's license bill for undocumented immigrants is not really Jerry's thing. That's was a result of a campaign, an effort made by Gil Cedillo, now assemblyman, before that Senator Gil Cedillo, that he's been doing now since way back in the Schwarzenegger years, and even before that, actually, in the Gray Davis years. So I don't see Jerry. I think he's holding things on a sort of a steady but rather inadequate course.
And Mark?
Well, in this term, I think he deserves credit for last year's decision to eliminate redevelopment agencies, which were, you know, really a growing cancer on the state's fiscal situation. About one out of every $8 in the state had been diverted to, you know, for doing local redevelopment projects, many of which are very low priority subsidies to developers, et cetera.
You mean through tax increment financing?
Through tax increment financing, money that was in effect being taken out of the schools and funneled to building football stadiums and shopping centers and the like. So that was a tough call. There was a lot of opposition to that, and he carried it through. So I think is of the, on the fiscal side of the house is the most important thing he's done in the second. Term.
And that's Mark Paul. He is the author of the new book, California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. We're talking about the governorship of Jerry Brown and his legacy. This is his third term as governor. And we're also joined by Peter Schrag, who's the former editorial page editor and columnist of the Sacramento Bee. And he's the author most recently of Not Fit for Our Society, Immigration and Nativism in America. And we'd like to invite you to join our conversation about Governor Brown. You can give us a call at 866-798-TALK, and that is a toll-free number, 866-798-8255, or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we are talking about Governor Jerry Brown, his legacy, and his first 2 years in office this term. So how different are Jerry Brown's fiscal policies from that of his predecessor, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Mark, I'll leave that one to you.
Okay. Well, I think that Jerry is a genuine fiscal conservative, more so than Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger
talk, but didn't walk the walk.
Yeah, talk the talk, but didn't walk the walk. I mean, he talked about tearing up the credit card, but in fact, you know, the Schwarzenegger years, you know, California tried to borrow its way out of its fiscal imbalance between taxes and spending programs. And Jerry come in and made balancing the budget in his top priority. That's what Prop 30 is about. That's what all the spending cuts that we've seen, you know, last year, the huge cuts in University of California and California State University. That Brown is a true fiscal conservative. He's never liked taxes. He didn't like taxes in his first term as governor. He's never proposed that the legislature actually increase taxes on its own hook. He's always, even in the first term, insisted that any tax increase be approved by the voters or somebody else. So that he is, and in many ways, you know, if you go back and you look at what Meg Whitman proposed in the 2010 campaign and what Jerry's done, you know, he's carried out a large part of her platform. He's done the pension reform. He's cut back the number of state workers as Meg Whitman had proposed. He's done some reorganization of state agencies, you know, and he's done, you know, all of the very symbolic kinds of things like take away cell phones from state workers and reduce the number of state cars, et cetera, including, you know, even to the extent of not patching the hole in the rug in his office with state money.
And
of course, even in his first terms as governor, he was famous for his austerity, driving the cheap Plymouth rather than the chauffeured state limousine, living in on a mattress or on a futon in his apartment across the street from not living in any kind of a gubernatorial mansion. So that's been part of him. And one of the things that's forgotten is that 30 years ago, Jerry Brown endorsed the passage of a federal balanced budget amendment, which again gives you some idea of his sort of fiscal orientation.
And so we're about to go to the break, but I want to just get started. You seem to say that he's been consistent. Can you go back to the 70s, to 1974, and tell us what was he like as a young politician then? And has it been consistent throughout?
He was... As you know, he followed Ronald Reagan as governor, and he treated the University of California in those days, and everybody who remembers that on the campuses will tell you that treated the University of California fiscally worse than Reagan did. Reagan was tough on some higher education stuff, but fiscally he treated the university better than Jerry Brown did. And I think Jerry Brown has always had an anti-institutional streak. He's always thought that people like college professors, and used to say that they get their psychic rewards, they don't need more money, and state employees generally. So he's always had a little bit of a contempt, disrespect for big institutions.
So do you, too, attribute the decline in California public education to Jerry Brown? I mean, obviously, Prop 13 has something to do with it, but...
Well, in fact, when Mark talked earlier, everything he said was absolutely correct about his lack of attempts to really solve the tax problem before it rose to the horrible crisis that brought Prop 13, or that caused Prop 13 to pass. But he himself was poor-mouthing things like the university and the schools when he was governor, so that he undercut some of the support that the schools might have had.
Peter, I'm going to just stop you there. We'll take it up right after the break. That's Peter Schrag, who writes a weekly column for California Progress Report. We're also talking with Mark Paul, who's an expert in California policy and author of California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. We're analyzing the governorship of Jerry Brown and his legacy, and we want to take your calls. How do you grade Governor Brown's performance? Give us a call at 866-798-8255. Talk, that's 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. If you follow Jerry Brown's career, what do you think of him as a politician, and what do you think of his legacy? And how does he differ from his predecessor, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger? What would you like to see change in the state? 866-798-8255. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on local public radio, KALW, San Francisco. To join in today's conversation, 866-798-TALK is the number. That's 866-798-8255. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices and listeners. If you prefer to write rather than call, you can send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a message at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow we'll talk about how we could transform our foreign policy to create a more just economy. We'll host a conversation with Bartlett and Steele. What is the connection between our economic model and our foreign policy? On Wednesday, we'll continue our election series and debate Proposition 34, which would end the death penalty in California and reduce sentences to life without parole. And today, we're discussing the long record of Governor Jerry Brown. And we'd love to hear from you. 1-866-798-TALK. That's our toll-free number. How do you grade Governor Jerry Brown's performance? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. You can also email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. What are Jerry Brown's most significant accomplishments? And where does he fall short? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. And we're speaking today with Peter Schrag, who is the former editorial page editor and columnist of the Sacramento Bee, and Mark Paul, who's a former deputy state treasurer and co-author of the new book, California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. And before we went to the break, gentlemen, we were talking about Jerry Brown as a young politician and how that compares to the Jerry Brown of today. And Peter, I was cutting you off, and then we'll go to you, Mark.
I can't remember now exactly where we stopped, but as I say, Jerry has had this austerity streak in him for a long time, and has had he was a kind of an acolyte or a I think very very much respected a number of thinkers who were themselves radical anti-institutional thinkers, Ivan Illich, Schumacher, a number of others, who were essentially critics of big organizations, of the way that big organizations destroyed individual autonomy, the ability of individuals to cope, and I think Jerry Brown very much respected, and I think absorbed that into his own outlook.
And let's go to our first caller, Ruth Ann. You are on your call. Welcome. Ruth Ann, are you with us? Do we have the phantom caller? We're having a little trouble with our phone system today. So let me go back to you, Mark. You didn't really weigh in on Jerry Brown as a young politician and compared to today.
Yeah, I mean, he very much partook, when he was young of the time in the 1970s. It was following on the Vietnam War when Watergate. He was elected in 1974, which is the year Richard Nixon resigned over Watergate. It was a period when trust in government began to plummet in the United States after a period, during from the Depression and World War II, when Americans very much increased their level of trust in government. So Jerry, it was initially as a governor was very much a piece of his time and of his generation, with skepticism about government. He had imbibed the smallest beautiful kind of message that Peter talked about, anti-institutional and a kind of environmental outlook on the world, which was pretty new at the time, or had come to the fore at the time, which it was in part led him to, I think, one of the biggest achievements of his first term, which was the California led the way in enacting energy efficiency standards for automobiles and for appliances and the rest, which is made a big difference today. I mean, California uses much less energy per person than any other place in the country. And Jerry, a lot of that is due to Jerry Brown in his first term as governor.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, in for Rose Aguilar. That was Mark Paul. He is co-author of The California Crack Up, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. We're also joined by Peter Schrag, who's the former editorial page editor and columnist for the Sacramento Bee. And he's the author most recently of Not Fit for Our Society, Immigration and Nativism in America. And we're analyzing the governorship of Jerry Brown and looking at his policies and trying to figure out What does this mean for who this is as a governor, both in the past and currently? And let's go to Barry in Oakland. Hi, caramba. We are not having good luck with the phones, my friends. So we'll go back then to Ron, to Mark Paul, not to be confused with Ron Paul. Sorry about that, Mark. Tell me a little bit about the California crack up, how reform broke the Golden State, and especially this question, how can we fix it? So what are some of the recipes to get us out of this?
Well,
you're both saying that 30 is a very short-term solution.
Right. I mean, the problem in California is that, you know, we have over the our history as a state, 162 years now, gone through a process of you know, piling, you know, incremental change on our governing system and on our constitution. You know, we now have a constitution that's the third longest of any in the world, and we have created a system that's, you know, when you look at it compared to the rest of the country and other states, it's a quite strange and radical system that we have in California, that with three different sort of ways of governing ourselves: one through just the normal electoral process, electing candidates for governor and legislature, a second system composed of all the supermajority requirements and budget mandates that we have built into our constitution in California that restrict the ability of any governor and legislature that we elect actually to do the things we want them to do, and then, you know, the third system, our very inflexible initiative process. And you know, Jerry, it's hard to assess any governor, Jerry Brown or any other, without understanding that the system is nearly impossible for anybody to make it work. I mean, Brown got elected in 2010, and what was the first thing he had to do? I mean, he had a clear majority. The Democrats had a clear majority in the legislature. He spent all of 2011 trying to beg the party whose ideas the voters had just rejected to provide a handful of votes to enact the program that the voters had approved, and of course couldn't do it, which is why we have Prop 30 on the ballot. I mean, Prop 30 is essentially just a measure to pass the state, the adopted state budget. So it's California, it's the system that makes it so difficult to maneuver for any governor, and we are never going to have a governor who we regard as a success, I suspect, until we take those three systems and integrate them in a way that they don't fight against each other, that will actually allow the people we elect to govern.
And that's Mark Paul. He's co-author of The California Crackup, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How We Can Fix It. You're listening to Your Call. We're analyzing the governorship of Jerry Brown and talking about the state of the state. We're also joined by Peter Schrag. He is the former editorial page editor and columnist of the Sacramento Bee. And we're going to try again for the phones. Apparently, our number is 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. How do you grade Governor Brown's performance, and what are his most significant accomplishments? Where does he fall short? And if you've been following his career, what do you think of him as a politician in terms of his legacy? The number is 866-798-8255, and we're going to try again here to go to Bob in Oakland. Hi, Bob. Welcome to your call. The phones are not working at all, I'm being told. Okay. Okay, well, I'm very sorry about that. So let's go back to Jerry Brown. How is his relationship with the legislators and particularly the Democrats? What's going on there?
I think what Mark said is absolutely right about the California system and how difficult it is and how unworkable it is. I think something else that has to be added to it, and by the way, Mark's co-author Joe Matthews just the other day described the state as basically continually adding rooms to the Winchester Mystery House, which I think is a good description of and by the way, it's a great book, California Crackup. Anyway, I think there's one other thing that I think we have to add, and that is that the political culture in California is also a part of the problem. We have a set of voters who want to obviously want high levels of public services, but are not willing to raise taxes to pay for them. We have a disconnect between the electorate, which tends still to be whiter, more affluent, older, and then the population as a whole, which, as we know, is now majority minority, Latino, Asian, to some extent African-American. So you have a reluctance among those whiter, older, more affluent voters to provide generous public services for people who they regard often as others. And I think that is part of the difficulty. I think that Jerry Brown has had to negotiate, as Mark has said, has had to negotiate not only that difficult system, but a political culture that is itself, to some extent, dysfunctional.
And, Mark, do you want to weigh in on that, the political culture and how it informs how the state works and Governor Jerry Brown's relationship with legislators?
In addition to the things that Peter talked about, then there is another big part of the political culture in California is the role that the outsized role that money plays in setting the agenda in California and making anything happen. And so for instance, in dealing with the legislature, you know, Brown had you know, to consider, you know, the difficulties that, you know, the legislators themselves, their priorities are in part set by, you know, keeping happy the interest groups that fund campaigns for and against legislators. And even as he himself has admitted in shaping Proposition 30, you know, it is not the measure that he would have ideally wanted to put on the ballot, but it was determined in part the tax part of the measure was determined by what would be likely to draw the least opposition in terms of big contributions against it. So, for instance, you know, it would have been quite logical in California, for instance, to enact an oil severance tax. We're the only jurisdiction in the world that doesn't have one. It's a tax that for California would be essentially free money, since it would be an attack, you know, the tax would fall on the producers of oil in Saudi Arabia and other places. But you can't do it in California. You know, he was reluctant to do it because that brings $100 million of oil company money down on your head if you do. So that's another big factor that, you know, that Brown and all governors have to deal with in thinking about either the initiative process or in their relationship with the legislature.
And you're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about Jerry Brown as governor, and we're analyzing his governorship. I have a couple of emails I'm going to read. This first one is from Nancy. She says, there are so many eligible state prisoners who could be paroled, which would free up a lot of money for California. And I think that's something that realignment attempts to do. I have always had, this is from Mike from Berkeley, I've always had respect for Governor Brown, his father and his sister. I listened to him on Bay Area radio quite a bit. Proposition 13 was too radical. He shouldn't have backed it. But I think of him now as a tough governor who has the respect of Californians, making very hard calls in a state with a gridlocked legislature. Arnold was a celebrity. In fact, I think he gained some understanding of the seriousness of being governor, and he realized he couldn't force his will on the political process. So celebrity or professional, I'd always go for the pro, writes Mike in Berkeley. Bob, who tried to call, said, he did so much for Oakland, and this shows how difficult it is to govern California. So it is very different to be a city mayor than it is to be governor of California. But when you look at Jerry Brown's career, how where do you place his mayorship of Oakland?
I'm a resident of Oakland, and for good and ill. I think he was a pretty good mayor, but of course he had the good fortune of being mayor at an economically very good time. So I don't know how he would have done in worse times, but I think he did begin to again re-energize Oakland a little bit during his years as mayor, and I think was very much engaged. And I think he learned a lot about governing by being having to operate at a local level, and I think to some extent that has informed his governorship this time. Though I'm at a loss at the moment to specify how.
Yeah, because I'd be really interested to hear.
A relatively good mayor.
Yeah, I think his having been mayor, you know, has informed him better about how government actually translates down to the level of the streets and ordinary people, which was, you know, for Brown, it was particularly a problem. I would argue in his first term. I mean, you know, Brown is somewhat unusual. I mean, he's, you know, as a politician, in that he is more divorced from the ordinary experience of life that most people have than the typical politician. I mean, this is a man who's never had children, who didn't marry until he was in his 60s, you know, spent almost his entire life as a candidate. As you specified at the beginning of the show, I mean, he's run statewide 6 times and run for president 3 times and won 2 local offices in between. So it's, you know, he's didn't have a lot, never really worked much in the public sector, private sector. So he, I think being mayor of Oakland has helped inform him about sort of the nitty-gritty. And it's really a theme of, you know, if you go through, we were talking about the bills he signed and vetoed. A lot of the bills he vetoed, the veto messages say, you know, this is something that really needs to be taken care of at the local level. I mean, Jerry would like to, understands, I think, that California has gotten too centralized, and he'd like to devolve authority and decision-making power back to more of it to local communities. That, you know, sort of a general preference, although he is unwilling to tackle Proposition 13, which is really what needs to be changed if we're going to do that.
Is he entirely unwilling to tackle 13?
That's what he said in the interviews. He's said that, you know, people won't go for it. It's one of the paradoxes, you know, that I've written about Jerry Brown is that he, I think, understands, you know, how dysfunctional the system is, but is unwilling to propose or to argue to Californians that they need to make big changes because he regards that as impossible. But unfortunately, he's discovering it may be impossible even to do small things in California.
And that's Mark Paul. We're also joined by Peter Schrag, and we're analyzing the governorship of Jerry Brown here on Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and in for Rose Aguilar, who's out sick today, and we've been having a bit of difficulty with the phones. We're going to try one more time to see if we've got a workaround here. Welcome to Your Call, Paul from Palo Alto.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Great to hear from you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm someone who wandered in from the desert, and now I can talk to you. Governor Jerry Brown signed a contract with the Prison Guard Union, the second largest government employee union in the state, in 2011, and it gives them unlimited ability to bank vacation time now. There are no limits on the amount of vacation time they can bank.
Correctional officers in the state's prisons.
That's going to cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars. What do your guests think about that?
Mark? Peter?
For me, you're going to have to repeat the question. I could not understand the question. I couldn't really hear it.
Paul, are you still there? It looks like we've lost Paul. Let me see if I can paraphrase. What I think that he said is that the governor negotiated a new contract with the CCPOA, the California Correctional Peace Officers in the state's prisons, that allows them to bank all of their sick and vacation time, I believe is what he said. What do you think, which will cost a lot to the state? I hope I'm getting it correctly here, Paul. So he wanted you to comment on that.
Mark, I don't know what the details of that contract are. I don't know, maybe Mark does.
I don't know the details, but in general, I mean, no governor has other than Schwarzenegger, who has been willing to take on the prison guards very much. But on, you know, juries, remember, there may be in that some quid pro quo. I mean, the prison
realignment.
CCPOA did not heavily oppose the realignment, which moves has reduced the number of people in state prison in state prisons, and therefore is going to reduce the number of members of and or overtime for CCPOA members. So it's hard to know without, I don't know the details of that negotiation, et cetera, and the politics of that deal, but it's hard to know whether that nets out, you know, whether or not there's a net savings or a net cost to the state in that deal.
So that leads me to another question, which is maybe you two could go through and give us a little bit of a sense of how, where Jerry Brown stands in terms of labor in the state. What's his relationship like with organized labor?
It was in many ways it was good, and of course he's gotten on Prop 30. He's gotten the big teachers unions to support it and to put money into it. And of course he was, and we haven't mentioned that he was the sponsor of the farm labor law, which California pioneered. All these many years ago, for basically collective bargaining rights to farm workers, the Agricultural Labor Relations Act, and there were a number of other things. So I think his relations with labor, unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger's, which were testy and sometimes very hostile, I think have been pretty good.
And I'm just going to mention that he did veto SB 2346, which would have allowed farm workers to enforce the state's heat regulations themselves by suing employers who fail more than twice to comply with mandatory shade and drinking water requirements. So that's another piece of legislation that was vetoed. We're going to try for the phones one more time. If you want to join our conversation, we have just a few minutes left. 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. I'm going to say it one more time. 866-798-8255. And let's try for Ellen in Corte Madera. Hi, Ellen.
Thanks a lot. Very quickly, I'm with Healthcare for All California. We've been promoting single-payer, publicly financed health care. This is Jerry Brown is a fiscal conservative. This is a way to save a lot of taxpayer money and achieve the social goal of making affordable health care for everybody. So what are the chances with Governor Brown of moving forward in this legislative session?
Go ahead, Peter or Mark.
Well, I don't. Given the passage nationally of the Affordable Care Act, and the issue really has, I think, for California and for a long time has been solved. You know, decided we're going to go to the path of the Affordable Care Act, and the Brown administration, California, has been active in getting California ready for implementing the provisions of that act. So I think. For the near future, that the single payer is off the table, both in the legislature and nationally.
And Alan asks, why don't they have a ballot initiative to change the Constitution and make it more workable, thus solving some of these intractable problems in California? Can anybody answer that one?
Well, there was talk a few years ago. In fact, there was a campaign on to call a constitutional convention to rewrite the entire Constitution. You can't doing ballot measures. I don't think you can put a whole, unless there's a convention, you can't put a rewritten constitution on the ballot. And of course, the thing, I mean, I used to say that in California, the best reform would be to repeal the Constitution and adopt the civics textbook, which would be comprehensible to people. But it's a good question. The California Constitution is unworkable, as Mark has pointed out in his book, and that's of course what you really want to do. Patches. I mean, and I think the question again raises the question of how can you keep patching the thing? And you can't.
And let me go to Mark, because we just have 1 minute before the end of the show, Mark, and I just wanted to ask you, what would you like to see happen politically in California in the next, say, 2 to 6 years?
Well, I'd like to see, you know, the leaders of the state level with the rest of us and admit that the system that we've built for ourselves, this Winchester Mystery House, you know, just doesn't work, and to enlist the energies of the people of California in trying to reshape the system as it's been done in other states, you know, to have a constitutional convention or at least a conference, constitutional conversation to start, so that we could actually begin to move toward a government that might work.
And is there a movement for that to happen?
There has, you know, as Peter said, the Bay Area Council there would push the idea. The group California Forward has talked about big reform, but has ended up only with incremental kind of technocratic stuff. We just need to recognize that that's what we need to do.
Well, it sounds like that should be another show. We're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Mark Paul, who's a leading expert on California policy and politics, and he's the co-author with Joe Matthews of The California Crackup, How Reform Broke the Golden State and How It Can Be Fixed. Peter Schrag writes weekly columns for the California Progress Report. He's the former editorial page editor and columnist of the Sacramento Bee, and he's the author most recently of Not Fit for Our Society, Immigration and Nativism in America. Thank you both for joining us. We'll put links to that and more information at our website. I thank everybody for joining us. I apologize that we were having so much trouble with the calls. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. How could we transform our foreign policy to create a more just economy? On the Next Year Call, we'll have a conversation with the authors of The Betrayal of the American Dream. They argue that since the 1980s, the ruling elite have sold their business-friendly reforms to the American people in the name of economic efficiency. Join us live at 10 or send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. What will it take to achieve equity and prosperity for everyone? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.
This is KALW San Francisco, and this is a test of the emergency alert system. And that concludes this test of the emergency alert system. You're listening to KALW San Francisco. We're online at KALW.org. Stay tuned. Up next, from the World Service of the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. The time is 11 o'clock.
Hello, welcome to World Have Your Say from the BBC. I'm Ben James. This is the program where we reflect the stories you're talking about.
There was a period of time where I really thought I'm in trouble, because I have a manual push button where I can release a drogue chute, which pulls me out of the flat spin. But at the same time, I knew if I push that button, this thing is all over. We're not going to fly supersonic.
Millions of you watched Austrian skydiver Felix Baumgartner as he jumped to the Earth from a balloon on the edge of space. So is it an achievement to be celebrated or a fuss about nothing? What does the feat add to humanity? That's what you're talking about at facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay. Also, the Mo Ibrahim Foundation declines to award its annual prize again. It's meant to be given every year for good governance in Africa. So what does that say about the state of the continent's leadership?